the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing. Except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear. Cause London is drowning. I live by the river to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go in alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't wanna shout. But while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide. Except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thin. A nuclear error, but I have no fear. Cause London is drowning.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday, another busy news day in America and around the world. The morning began. Well, you know what? As the pre-show music sort of hinted, we're going to head over to England today. We're going to check in with our friend Dennis Campbell, also known as UK Progressive. Actually, he's the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine. That's his Twitter handle as well. He's also one of the three muckrakers in the podcast of the same name. And we'll check in with Dennis about tomorrow's election and all the other stuff going on over there. But I've got to start with what's happening here. First of all, this morning, it was the precursor to tomorrow's hearing, tomorrow's big hearing with James Comey. It was Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, Acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe, National Security Advisor Mike Rogers, and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. That's how you say it, Stein, not Steen. It's Frankenstein, but it's Rod Rosenstein. And boy, they spent a lot of time answering nothing. We say nothing. We tell you nothing. We will say nothing at all. We'll get to some of those sound clips in a few minutes. But breaking news, you know, Dump himself went to, I think, Cleveland to try to get some of the attention off of the hearings that are happening, you know, today and tomorrow. And, well, just as he, I guess, was speaking, doing, reading his teleprompter that he does oh so horribly, the Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, apparently something that was agreed upon between Director Comey and the chairman of the committee, Senator Burr, is that they would release his opening statement today. And so Twitter is all abuzz. The Washington Post is abuzz. I mean, everything is buzzing with the James Comey's statement for the record. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, dated tomorrow, by James Comey. I just tweeted it out. Actually, I retweeted Elizabeth Warren's tweet of the statement. It runs 7 pages, so it's not that long, but it's too long for me to read to you. Anyway, it is tweeted out, and if you follow me on Facebook, it's on my Facebook page as well. I know I'm up around that 5,000 mark. I keep deleting people, but I keep getting up there. So if I haven't accepted you as a friend on Facebook, it's okay, because my page is set to public. So you can read my my Facebook posts, even if we're not officially Facebook friends. Anyway, it's there. Read it, at your leisure, although you'll hear him say the words tomorrow. Basically, it's Comey saying what some of the stories that we've heard of his direct interactions with Trump. There were, I think he said, 2 or 3 face-to-face meetings and a number of phone calls, which are pretty much unprecedented. And the most damning thing about it is James Comey says, and he will say it under oath tomorrow, that Donald Trump asked him to let go the investigation into Mike Flynn and the things that he said, basically when he lied, I think, on his security clearance reports. Anyway, that's all in there. Now, today's hearing with the 4 I just mentioned was supposed to be about FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and the FISA court in Section 702 and things that sort of make my eyes roll back in my head. And some questions were about that. Senator Ron Wyden, you knew it. He was there. He was asking questions about FISA and how it works, how it's supposed to work, how it doesn't necessarily work, all that stuff. But for the most of the rest of the senators, they seemed more interested in finding out if some of the stories that have been printed in the paper recently, in fact, as recently as today in the Washington Post, if they would corroborate those stories. And this was one of the last exchanges of the hearing this morning with John McCain and the witnesses. John McCain, of whom I'm not the biggest fan, he was expressing his frustration at the fact that, they're saying that these communications are classified, and McCain's saying, it's all there on the Washington Post this morning.
Well, it's an unfortunate situation that you're sitting there because it's classified information, and this morning's Washington Post describes in some detail, not just outline, but times and dates and subjects that are being discussed. And I'm certainly not blaming you, but it certainly is an interesting town in which we exist.
Yeah, just because it's published in the Washington Post doesn't mean it's all now unclassified.
No, just because it's in the Washington Post doesn't mean that it's now unclassified. But there is the question of what is classified and what isn't. And what was being asked about most today really had nothing to do with things that were classified. I'll tell you, Marco Rubio thought he was being sly, but I'm going to play a minute-long exchange, and I really think this was damning for Trump.
My questions are geared to Director Coates and Admiral Rogers. You have testified that you have never felt pressured or threatened by the president or by anyone to influence any ongoing investigation by the FBI. Are you prepared to say that you have never felt that you've never been asked by the President or the White House
Listen.
To influence an ongoing investigation?
Well, Senator, I just hate to keep repeating this, but I'm going to do it. I am willing to come before the committee and tell you what I know and what I don't know. What I'm not willing to do is to share what I think is confidential information that
Uh-oh.
Ought to be protected in an open hearing. And so I'm not prepared to answer your question today.
Director Coates, I would just say, and with incredible respect that I have for you, I am not asking for classified information.
No,
I'm
you're
asking
not.
Whether or not you have ever been asked by anyone to influence an ongoing investigation.
I understand, but I'm just not going to go down that road in a public forum. And I also was asked the question if the special prosecutor called upon me to meet with him to ask his questions, I said I would be willing to do that.
I likewise stand by my previous comment.
Boy, Rogers. That was Rogers saying, I likewise stand by my previous comment. I think those were the words he most often uttered this morning. And Coates. Coates was just all over the place. Listen to this. This is Senator Angus King from Maine asking, quotes, why he won't just answer yes or no. Look, they said they didn't feel like they were pressured or threatened into doing anything or saying something, but they wouldn't answer the question as to whether or not they were ever asked.
Mr. Coates, same series of questions. What's the basis for your refusal to answer these questions today?
Yeah.
The basis is what I've previously explained. I do not believe it is appropriate for me to...
What's the basis? I'm not satisfied with I do not believe it is appropriate or I do not feel I should answer. I want to understand a legal basis. You swore that oath to tell us the truth.
The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
And today you are refusing to do so. What is the legal basis for your refusal to testify to this committee?
I'm not sure I have a legal basis, but I am more than willing to sit before this committee and during its investigative process in a closed session and answer your question. Well,
he's not sure he has a legal basis to refuse to answer the question, but he did anyway. Donald Trump has these people so scared for their jobs. And my question would be, why do you want the job in the first place if you're so afraid of your boss, who is probably, allegedly, doing nefarious things, putting the country at risk? How could you not answer the question? Angus King wrapped up his 5 minutes of questioning thusly.
I would just add in conclusion that both of you testified you had never been pressured under 3 years. I would argue that you have waived executive privilege by, in effect, testifying as to something that didn't happen. And I believe you opened the door to these questions.
Boom.
And it is my belief that you are inappropriately refusing to answer these questions today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You go, Senator. And it went like that. I don't have any of her tape, but Kamala Harris of California showed, you know, she was California's attorney general. By the way, Jimmy Perez won the runoff yesterday in Los Angeles, County. He is the new congressman from L.A., replacing Javier Sarah, who's the new Attorney General of California, so another really good progressive congressman out of California in heading to Congress. And the reporter body slammer guy, Gianforte from Montana, still hasn't been sworn in. Also hasn't shown up in court for his assault charge. He got like a 3-week delay, so he has 3 more weeks to go before the judge, just saying. Look at who we're each sending to Congress. Just saying. But I don't have Kamala Harris's questions, although she did great, even though which one of them was it? I think it was Coates. Boy, he turned out to be the most annoying is not quite the right word. The worst offender of all of them. He's the one who said, I'm not sure I have any legal basis not to answer your questions, but I'm not going to answer them anyway. Listen to Senator Heinrich of Nevada. He's a new one, and he's the one who replaced Harry Reid, I believe. And his questioning, boy, he was impressive.
Director McCabe, did Director Comey ever share details of his conversations with the president with you? In particular, did Director Comey say that the president had asked for his loyalty?
Sir, I'm not going to comment on conversations the director may have had with the president.
It was a broken record.
I know he's here to testify in front of you tomorrow. You'll have an opportunity to ask him those things then.
I'm asking you, did you have that conversation with Director Comey?
And I've responded that I'm not going to comment on those conversations.
Why not?
Because for two reasons. First, as I mentioned, I'm not in a position to talk about conversations that Director Comey may or may not have had with the president.
I'm not asking you that. I'm asking about conversations that you had with Director Comey.
And I think that those matters also begin to fall within the scope of issues being investigated by the special counsel, and it wouldn't be appropriate for me to comment on those.
I'm not going to keep playing it because that's how it went. They wouldn't answer the questions. And they're saying, well, it may be under the scope of what the special counsel is investigating, but we haven't gotten any guidelines from Robert Mueller of what we're allowed to ask and what we need to stay away from. Mueller hadn't spoken with either the chair and vice chair of the committee, nor any of the witnesses to say, stay away from this area, or, you know, this is okay to ask, but that isn't. Gave them no guidelines whatsoever. These four men, who I believe are in the pocket of Donald Trump, because they're afraid to lose their jobs, were all they just would not say a word. Although Coates and which one? Coates and not McCabe. Oh God, I see I'm losing track. Mike Rogers. Mike Rogers was the worst. You could tell he wants to be Dump's golfing buddy. He wouldn't say a word against him. They had no trouble saying we were never threatened into saying or doing anything, but they wouldn't admit to whether or not they were ever asked, which tells us all we need to know. Again, tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, is when James Comey begins testifying. Get the popcorn ready. Oh, there's more to talk about, too. Oh, God, Eric Trump. Let me real quickly do this. Eric Trump was on Sean Hannity's show last night, and I don't know what Hannity played as the intro, but then Eric Trump comes on the set and says this.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Don't you wish you went to Washington so you could be dealing with this every second of every day?
You know what? I've never seen hatred like this. I mean, to me, they're not even people. It's so,
talking
so
about
sad.
Democrats.
I mean, morality's just gone. Morals have flown out the window. We
really
deserve so much better than this as a
You're
country.
Right.
We do deserve so much better than this as a country. Eric Trump has the gall to talk about ethics or morals and morality. Let me read to you a little bit of this. Dan Alexander reports for Forbes. We talked about this a bit yesterday with Gotta Laugh, that Eric Trump's foundation raised a bunch of money ostensibly to help kids suffering from cancer, but some of which was then funneled into the Trump Organization. Shocker. Trump's second son told donors that the Trump Organization would effectively donate a golf course and catering for an annual charity event, which would then allow all of the proceeds to go to the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. St. Jude's! This was for St. Jude's! But instead, they charged inflated fees for the golf course, for the catering, for other things probably, not all of which they can account for. And they also diverted some of the funds to Donald Trump's foundation, which has used its resources to, you know, settle personal and business legal claims against Trump and for other dubious purposes. And he has the gall to talk about morals and morality? Are you fucking kidding me? We are so in opposite world. We are living... We've gone down the rabbit hole, people.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
All right, we'll get further into the weeds on a lot of this tomorrow. But today we've got Dennis Campbell coming up. You know him as at UK Progressive. In fact, you know what? I'm going to call him now instead of we'll just do what's news at the end of the show. Okay, but you got to promise you got to stay through it, because I usually play what's news in the middle of the show to make sure you listen. Because I put a lot of work into it every day, but just today I don't want to take time away from Dennis Campbell. So let's call him. Uh-oh, why does it look like he's not online? I know Dennis Campbell is there. Dennis, you there?
Hello.
Hi. I changed my plans. I decided instead of breaking, I was going to go right to you because there's so much to talk about. So
it's been a crazy time.
He is the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine. He is one of the Three Muckrakers in the Three Muckrakers podcast. You find him on Twitter at UK Progressive. Dennis Campbell is an American expatriate living over. You're in Wales, right? That's what part of the UK you're in.
I am indeed.
And just for those who don't know you, Dennis, how long have you been over there?
Oh, I've been in Europe for 20 years and been in Wales for 14.
So you're entrenched. That's, in fact, you stood for office this year. You actually ran for election.
It was last year. It was the Welsh Assembly. We seem to have this habit of doing elections in pairs. The first election back in 2016 was for the Welsh Assembly government, and I was a candidate for the Vale of Glamorgan, which is the area in Wales in which I live. And then 6 weeks after that, we had the big Brexit vote on the 23rd of June, and that didn't go particularly well for those who like staying in the European Union. And we're doing the same thing again this year. We have just had our local elections, which is for all of the local councils and the people who keep the lights on and the garbage trucks running and all the things that need to happen at a local level. And those were back in the early part of May. And then tomorrow we have a snap general election, which was called by Theresa May about 7 weeks ago. And all 650 members of the UK House of Commons are standing.
Now, see, this is what, and again, things work very differently over there than they do over here. Theresa May was only elected less than a year ago, wasn't it?
Well, she wasn't even elected. I mean, she was, if you think about it, they went through a leadership process within the Tory party, and there were four candidates, two of the four were completely dismissed because they did very stupid things during the election campaign. And that left Theresa May and one other candidate who, upon seeing that Theresa May was going to be likely the winner, withdrew. Mm. So rather than wait for, I think it was the 6 weeks they needed to actually hold the election, because she was the last woman standing, she was appointed leader of the Tory party, the Conservatives, be the equivalent of your Republicans, right, and GOP, and she became the prime minister as the leader of the party, because the Conservatives had the majority of, I think, about 18 seats in the House of Commons. So she became prime minister, but she was never elected as prime minister. And that has been, I think, gnawing away at her a bit, because she once said, well, not once, but six different, there's no way she would ever call a snap election. And our laws were changed a few years back to eliminate snap elections. Basically, we had an act of Parliament passed, which was the Fixed Term Act, which said that basically when you had a general election, that was for 5 years. And she said repeatedly on broadcast after broadcast, there was absolutely no way she would ever call a snap election. So, of course, when the polls looked as though they were at their biggest, she was holding a commanding 20-point lead over the rival Labour Party, which would be your Democrats, right, in the United States. She said that we're going to hold a snap election. So that required first repeal of the Fixed Term Act by Parliament, which of course they did, and then the gearing up process of about 7 weeks from the fact that we're going to have the election. We've been in something called PURDA, P-U-R-D-A-H, which is when Parliament is dissolved. Theresa May literally has to go to the Queen and say, I'm dissolving the government and we're going to call a general election. She assents to that, and then the process begins with, you know, very strict financial limits. There are no television adverts other than party political adverts. And you have to live within your means and within your budgets. But even that's been called into question based on what they did in 2015. So it's a very rigorous and very intense process we've been through, where I think we're to the point after 7 weeks of saying, okay, enough, we're going to go and vote, and hopefully this thing will quiet down, because Brexit negotiations begin on the 19th of June.
Oh,
that's
boy.
In 2 weeks' time.
Now, I've got so many questions, so let's go through as many as we can. So tomorrow's election day.
And I do apologize to your listeners. I am very, very ill, so
if
I sound as though I'm in a tin can, it's because I probably am.
No, you're sounding very sultry, so, you know, like a late night
this
DJ.
This is my Barry White voice.
It's
it's your late night DJ. See, if you were a woman, we'd say, ooh, you got that thing going on. But thank you for joining us. I know we set this up last week, and so you're probably feeling fine. So I really appreciate you coming on and being here, even not feeling well. How do you guys vote over there? Do you use paper ballots like normal people should vote, or do you use some highfalutin, unreliable, easily hackable electronic voting machines?
We actually step into the voting booth. We're issued a polling card, which is mailed to us. You don't have to bring that with you. You don't even have to bring ID. Hmm. You walk in and you say, you know, I'm Dennis Campbell. I live at blah, 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 blah. And they say, yes, I've got you. They check you off and they hand you a piece of paper, which will have, in this case, seven candidates from the various political parties here within the constituency of the Vale of Glamorgan. You walk over, you pick up a pencil, you put an X in the box which you'd like to have, and then you place your X'd ballot into the ballot box.
Amazing. Amazing.
At 10 p.m. they're going to seal them. They seal them off so that you know that they're there. They send a recording piece of paper which says there are 472 ballots in this box. They go to the main counting facility in the town of Barrie, which is located about 25 minutes from here. And having watched the count before, obviously in my own contest as well as others in the past, it's a fascinating process. They literally bring the boxes in through the door. They're logged in, and then they're taken, and they take over a sports hall, like a series of basketball courts together, side by side by side. Mm-hmm. They set a giant U-shaped table up, and on the one side, on the inside of the U, where all the ballots are, and then on the outside of the U, the candidates and all of their observers can literally watch the count as it is happening. So the witnesses are along the outside taking count of how many come in. Some of them have very sophisticated computer programs that they can literally know how they're doing, just literally precinct by precinct, as they watch the paper ballots being counted and opened and sorted. And it's a two-step process. They sort through and put them into stacks of 50 with a rubber band around them. And it's really funny to watch all these people counting through papers using those little rubber thimble things to keep themselves from getting paper cuts and to keep their fingers tacky enough to move. And then they have to verify that if it said there were 472 ballots in the box, that they have sorted 472 right. ballots.
What a concept.
It's a verification process first. Then they go through the actual count itself.
And does this happen in each region throughout the UK? Obviously, the whole nation doesn't come to this one area.
Oh, it actually happens in all 650 constituencies across the UK. This is why it's such fun to watch, because they literally published, and I will send it to you when we're done here, so you can share it with your listeners, when we expect announcements to come in, starting with the first, because polls close at 10 p.m.
Right.
And there are two constituencies that literally have hired high school track stars to run out to cars, grab the boxes, and bring them back. And there's this massive race. It's like Dixville Notch.
Uh-huh.
The massive race to
get
be
it
first.
Done right at 10:05. But obviously they can't do it that fast because they're hand counting ballots.
Yeah, it's usually about midnight that their first results come in. And then you can tell based on the size and history when the others are expected to come. And this sheet that I'll send to you has them listed from about midnight right on through till noon tomorrow, when we will know. The bulk of the notifications start coming in around about 3 o'clock in the morning till about 7 o'clock in the morning. And by that point, you've got a pretty good idea of how things have gone. But the first and most important piece of information that will be announced tomorrow night at about 10:15 p.m. when polls have closed is the exit polling result.
Mm.
And when we did this 2 years ago in 2015, the exit poll showed that Labour was about to get crushed by the Tories. The Democrats were about to be crushed by the Republicans.
Right.
And nobody believed them. Indeed, one politician was being a pundit, and he said, look, if that happens, I'll eat my hat. Because it was so far out of line in terms of the way the predictions and the polling had gone that we were like, oh, wow, that's a real surprise. Nobody believed it. I know I was on air with a couple thinking, that's kind of crazy. I don't see that happening. We were all wrong. It was almost exactly how it went down.
Wow. See, over here, we get when the exit polling doesn't match the results, we're told, then they go back and they adjust the exit polling. Instead of saying, wait a minute, there's a problem here, because the exit polling asks people, just as the name implies, as the word implies, who did you just vote for? And, you know, they tell you. So it's odd that the exit polling would be wrong. And if there's a discrepancy, then there's a bigger problem. But that's not the way things work over here, because we live in opposite world. So we have the Tories, and obviously Theresa May is the candidate for the Tories, the Republican Party over there. And then you have Labor, which is akin to the Democrats, and it's Jeremy Corbyn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to say, Jeremy has run an amazing campaign. He was not expected to do well at all. In fact, if you replay and go back 7 weeks ago when this all started, he was pretty much expected to be trounced, absolutely destroyed.
I mean, that's why Theresa May called the election, right? If she thought he had a chance of winning, she wouldn't have called it.
Oh, no, she would. I mean, I think she's – the problem is that Theresa May is a terrible campaigner, and she's a terrible public speaker, which is kind of strange since you're the leader of Great Britain, but then you know what that's all about with Donald Trump. So, she's literally yesterday he was at a rally in Birmingham, which is an industrial city in the middle part of England, and there were thousands of people there. And she was shown being filmed in a closed and locked down factory building talking to about 20 or 30 people where she feels safe. And this is all starting to catch up with her, because from the beginning, they've been a one-trick pony. They've talked about something called strong and stable leadership, and that's all they've been able to say. And instead of showing what they would do, they've been painting Jeremy Corbyn as basically a closet communist who can't be trusted to do the Brexit deal. So therefore, all of the campaign has been spent attacking Corbyn and nothing about what they would do. And most of our people are pretty smart. They say, well, why am I doing this? And why am I listening to this? And what do you actually stand for? And she's been caught, as has he, in a series of horrific gaffes on television in front of live microphones. So they're both limping to the finish line. Now, the polls have tightened, but there's no way of knowing, you know, how far they've tightened. You know, she had a 20-point lead. Now some are saying that she's down 3. Some are saying she's down 5. She's going to win. She may end up having exactly the same majority at the end of the day as she does today. Mm-hmm. The party that has been most disappointing are the Liberal Democrats. This was expected to be their big moment to rise. That's the party I was a member of as well when I stood in the Welsh Assembly.
Okay,
they
now what's the difference?
To be in a position.
What's the difference between the Liberal Democrats and the Labor Party?
Well, it's just a matter of shades of degree. If you look at a spectrum, all right, and you put a line down the middle. To the right of that line are going to be the Tories. Mm-hmm. To the right of them are going to be UKIP, which is Nigel Farage's party,
right,
which are the ones
the
that push
people.
Brexit.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you go slightly to the left of that center line, you're talking Labor.
Okay.
Now, Corbyn's election has dragged them even further to the left, even more progressive, and he's been talking about pocketbook issues. And to the left of them is a party called the Liberal Democrats. And they were, you know, a combination of a couple of left parties, but they've been, you know, very progressive. But then they wrote a brilliant manifesto, which is what you do, by the way. Each party writes a manifesto and it says, this is, you know, who we are. This is what we're going to do. This is what we stand for. And then if there's a problem with the manifesto, as Theresa May learned, that she's trying to push something called a dementia tax. That's what the media and the public have called it, although she's looking at it as saying, we've got to find a way to pay for people as they get older. They require more care.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge gaffe, and she ended up having to reverse the manifesto points there. And you know, the Lib Dems, though, have written a brilliant manifesto. But the problem is the public still hasn't forgiven them for going into coalition with the Tories back in 2010. and not holding the Tories to account as a member of the government. So they're not to be trusted.
And that
and
comes
then to the left of them is the Green Party.
Oh, wow.
And then we have a couple of nationalist parties. There's a party of Wales called Plaid Cymru, and there's a party of Scotland called the SNP. And they're both out there on that left spectrum. But the SNP, the Scottish National Party, has about 50 seats. So they are a credible force there as well. And we're wondering how much of the vote they're going to keep.
Dennis Campbell is with us. UK Progressive on Twitter is where you find him. He's one of the hosts of the Three Muckrakers. He's with us, even though he's a bit under the weather, and we really appreciate it. How many seats are in Parliament?
650.
Oh, wow.
Although you never have 650 there because there's a large block of people from Northern Ireland that, because of the past, we call them the Troubles, never come to Parliament or to Westminster. So it's somewhere, a working Parliament is somewhere around about 630.
So, okay, there are no TV ads for candidates. There's none of that. So they're not in a perpetual fundraising mode to try to get people to give them money so that they can run more TV ads to convince you that they're the right candidate and that the other guy is evil incarnate.
Yeah, it's you've got a situation where each campaign has an agent, and that person is responsible for making certain that, you know, your messages are consistent. You're not saying anything libelous or slanderous. You're making certain that you raise the money appropriately and that you spend it appropriately. So they're not really a campaign manager. They're more of a campaign auditor, for lack of a better term. And I forget what the actual amount is, but it's somewhere between 20,000 and 30,000 pounds, which is about 35 to 40,000
right.
US dollars.
Wow.
Which is not a lot of money.
No.
But you know, each candidate gets a free mailing through the Royal Mail, so they don't have to pay postage on that. They just have to print it. And the parties each get a paid political broadcast, which is aired somewhere around about 10 p.m. on a given night, and each party puts a 2.5 to 3 minute advert, but it's usually a puff piece. It doesn't really do much to move the needles at all. The rest of the money goes into get out the vote efforts, research, constantly knocking on doors, flyers, communications. There's a lot of print. Parties are just beginning to discover within the last 5 years social media. But it is still a very tactile retail political system here.
Dennis, how much do recent news events have to do with maybe Theresa May's approval ratings? There a lot has been made in the papers over here of the fact that there have been three attacks within the course of 3 months. And, over here, that would go directly to the president. Even though, I mean, we could go round and round about, you know, how do you prevent, somebody getting into a car and running down people on the London Bridge?
Exactly.
Is this affecting her standing there?
We're not sure. It is having an impact, but the resilience of the British people is something that has astonished me. Even going back as far as 2005 with the 7/7 bombings, which to me were horrifically bad. I mean, it really shook my confidence. A number of subway trains had suicide bombers on them. A bus top was blown off, and it was such an important day because that was the day that we learned that the 2012 Olympics would be awarded to the UK. So it was one of those bittersweet moments of joy followed by horrific sorrow. And what stunned me back in the time was how quickly the news disappeared from the headlines. I mean, if it had happened in the United States, you'd still be hearing the theme music trailers. You'd still be hearing the voice of God announcer, terror on the streets, mm-hmm. And the hysteria that they have the ability to whip up would be whipped up. Here, that sign that you see everywhere on the internet, keep calm and carry on,
right,
is more than just a slogan. There's a sense of realism. I'm not going to call it fatalism because it's not. It's, the people who were harmed in Manchester, who were harmed on London Bridge, who were harmed in the Westminster Bridge attack a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it was tragic. It was horrific. I mean, anywhere between 15 and 20 people dead, plus another 50 to 100 injured in each of those cases. And most people thank their lucky stars that they were not involved. And then they open out their hearts to those who were affected in ways I've not seen. We had a concert on the telly on Sunday night, and I believe you were probably even able to see it there, the For Manchester concert. And it was a tremendous outpouring of emotion because Ariana Grande was there when the concert bomb went off in Manchester. And the spirit of the people, the resilience, it was a much needed bomb for a lot of people that were feeling hurt.
Bomb with an LM, just a different word, right? B-A-L-M. Just I'm differentiating between
bomb,
that and
like
bomb.
I'm sorry.
It's like a salve.
Salve. Yeah, yes. That's even better. You know, it was something that we needed because everybody was there was a lot of open worry out there, but most of it's gone. I was in London yesterday, which is why I've got this horrible throat. And it's only inconvenience and sign of it is a signboard. As you start to come in on the A4, you see something that says that, you know, London Bridge is still closed for after a major incident. And that was it.
Wow.
Traffic was flowing. People were moving and going about their lives. And that is something that the British people and indeed people across Europe have the ability to do. If you look at the Paris nightclub bombings, you look at what's happened in Belgium, you look what's happened, you know, pretty much anywhere across the European continent. There's outrage. People are angry. But life goes on, which frustrates the hell out of those that try to use terror. Now, in the United States, you have a president who will just do anything he can to foment that imbalance and everything that goes with it. And, you know, his remarks via Twitter were absolutely incendiary here, and he was dismissed as the buffoon that he is.
Well, and I wanted to get to Trump next. I've been trying to hold off as long as I could. You got the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who seems like a really decent guy, who made a statement, as you would expect the mayor of London to make, warning, look, people over here, a lot of them don't realize that guns are very abnormal in the UK, and even police officers don't regularly carry them. And what he said to the way I understood it, what he said to the people of London was, you're going to see an increased police presence, armed police, over the course of the next short while. Nothing to be alarmed about. We're working to keep everybody safe. What he was talking about not being alarmed about were the armed police officers, not the fact that there was just a terror attack in London. And Dump, as I call him, just misconstrued the whole thing and then doubled down on it when he was corrected. Oh, he's trying to clean up, doing a pretty bad job of it. You know, he is a buffoon, but was he believed to be the buffoon that he is before this, or did that just win over the last few stragglers?
I think it's beginning to win over stragglers in your country as well. I mean, I've read a couple of tweets from friends who have said, you know, I have somebody who was a Trump supporter who is saying, I need to have lunch with you because this is not right. So I think it's the sane part. The base of his will always eat up anything he says, like the attacks on Khan, because, you know, Sadiq Khan is a member of the Muslim faith. He doesn't wear his faith on his sleeve. He's a member of the Labour Party. He won the election fair and square, and he's done a very, very good job of keeping people, you know, calm. You know, even though you don't have people walking around the streets with guns, and that's both police and those that are, you know, private citizens, I try to imagine what these terrorist events would be like if they came out of these panel trucks with automatic weapons and started mowing people down. You know, I feel very safe here. It's like 0.04 incidents per 100,000 crime. And the police services have been training for these things. Eight minutes after the first call came in, all three of them were down. I mean, they were put down like dogs. And you cannot do any quicker. You cannot have any faster response. Yes, there were a couple of stories of people who had serious injuries that couldn't be attended to inside of the Borough Market, which is just off of London Bridge, because they had to be certain that they got everybody. Mm-hmm. But everybody was triaged and on their way to treatment or surgery within an hour of a horrific terror attack. This is what our security services train for. Instant reaction, instant movement, no matter where it is. Now they're talking about putting barricades along the bridges so that vehicles can't just climb up and go over them. Sorry, there goes my dog in
That's
the background.
That's okay. I've got one of those too.
Yeah. And, it's just amazing what they're able to accomplish and how quickly they're able to do it. And yet you still have people who are, talking about, making sure everybody's armed. They're talking about gun control. We solved the gun control issue in the Dunblane shooting in Scotland, and that was the end of guns in this country, and that's the way it should be.
What year was that?
I don't remember. No. I'd have to look. I have to look that one up.
I was just there. There's a wonderful Australian comedian named Jim Jefferies, and yeah. I heard him just in the car the other day, a comedy bit playing on the radio, talking about the Port Arthur massacre. They used to have guns there too, and they had the Port Arthur massacre in 1996, and they said, you know what? Enough of the guns. We're going to get rid of them. And they did. And they've not had a massacre, a mass shooting, which I think means three or more people shot in one incident since. It seems like such a no-brainer. But then he went on to talk about, and then in the States, you have Sandy Hook, where, 20 children, babies are gunned down. And they say, well, maybe we'll do away with the long guns. And still you got half the country screaming, no, you can't take our long guns. It's just insane.
It was the Dunblanes was in Stirling, Scotland on the 13th of March, 1996. Ended up killing 16 children and a teacher at Dunblane Primary School, and then turned the gun on himself. So it was a massive event, as they say.
And an event like that, you would think, would get a country to say, there's something seriously wrong with us.
Well, Sandy Hook.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And here, nothing has happened since then.
Crickets.
Yeah. And to the point where, Obama, part of the whole thing, when President Obama was elected, the first term, the gun sales skyrocketed because the Republicans, their line was, he's going to come for your guns. He's going to take your guns. And they had a boom in gun sales the entire 8 years Obama was in office because of those scare tactics, because everyone's convinced he's going to come for your guns. He never came for anyone's guns. Nothing happened. Which, makes people like me more than a little disgusted. Donald Trump recently did his first overseas trip. And it's funny, I laugh because he's such a buffoon. He's such a moron. There's so much to make fun of him about. And I would think maybe if I was in another part of the world, I might have a little more of a sense of humor about it. But over here, we have a lot of anxiety. And I'm wondering if the rest of the world is feeling the anxiety we feel because he's got the nuclear codes.
Yeah, I've nicknamed it Trump fatigue syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because he's like an addled child. He cannot seem to, go 10 minutes without doing something or touching something or breaking something. And, I would hate to be a White House staffer. I mean, I'm a visiting member of the White House press corps and I enjoy spending a day at the White House when I take a trip to the United States. And now I just live in abject fear and terror of what has happened to the Brady press briefing room. It's become a complete circus and a free for all. And when you have the Daily Caller and several of these far, far right
Breitbart
weirdo.
Breitbart got credentials.
Not just Breitbart, but who's the guy that just got the credential last week that was so far off
somebody from Breitbart.
And it's just, they're getting questions and being taken as serious journalists. And, it was always a very tight room because there's only 48 seats. But now it's become a rugby scrum, you know, where you've got, you know, people four or five deep along each aisle, along the back. And, you know, people whom I respect and admire are just treated like garbage by having to put up with blatant direct lies from Sean Spicer or Sarah Huckabee Sanders or Kellyanne Conway standing at that podium and just, you know, up is down.
It is. In is out. Do you get the briefings over there, or you can get anything on the internet? Is that just it now? Everything's available?
Yeah, but there are a number of outlets here that because it's, you know, I believe it was Trump who said, you know, no, I'm not going to fire Spicer because he gets good ratings on TV.
Yeah.
You know, I could think, are you kidding me? You know, the Melissa McCarthy stuff on Saturday Night Live has just been brilliant. We see that as well.
We wanted to see Rosie O'Donnell.
When he does stupid stuff, I mean, Twitter sends alerts, and then we get all of these websites, including The Guardian here, ready to do a live feed of the presser because nobody wants to miss the next round of stupid.
Well, that's it. You know, there was a push to get Rosie O'Donnell on Saturday Night Live as Steve Bannon. She even did a mock-up of it, and she looked, I mean, it was scary. She looked like him. Maybe that's going to be their fall opener. I'm hoping they're gone by then, although 4 years is a long time. And actually, although, you know, evidence is coming out each day that of Russian interference in the election, we don't know to what extent, except we do know that they were working to diligently influence the election in favor of Trump. There's no mechanism in the Constitution for a do-over to void an election.
No.
So it's President
Pence.
No, God. Unless they can prove that he's complicit
Then you get President Ryan.
Unless we can wait until after 2018, and given that the Democrats can flip the House, then I guess President Pelosi, which, you know, the problem with the Democrats over here is we need some new blood. I'm not an ageist. I love Bernie Sanders, but the Democratic Party, the leadership, needs new young blood. There's nobody there. I do a segment on Thursdays with Howie Klein. I don't know if you read downwithtyranny.com. But Howie is—he runs the Blue America PAC, and which it's their, you know, mission to find, to identify, and help raise money for the best progressive candidates. Because it's not enough to have a D next to your name, as you understand over there with so many different parties. You know, they need to be progressive. Over here, unfortunately, we've got, it is a two-party system. Even though people yell at me when I say that. The idea of Trump, if he had run as a third party candidate, he would not be in the White House today.
I just worry, though, that the Democrats haven't learned their lesson.
They have not.
And they're still, you know, doing 30,000 foot high, you know, look downs at flyovers of areas that, you know, they lost parts of their base to Trump, to his message. And the only thing that's going to get them back is the realization that the jobs that he's talking about are gone forever.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking 70,000 coal jobs.
Yeah, they're not coming back. And the thing that would make so much sense is you say, okay, we're going to have a retraining program for all the displaced coal workers. We're going to train them in how to make solar panels and wind turbines. And we're going to have a jobs program.
Did you see there's an actual photograph of the headquarters of some coal board where they were installing solar panels on the roof?
I did not.
It was a brilliant photograph.
I'll bet. And that's what it should be. But, you know, Dennis, it brings us back to the beginning of the conversation when you were talking about Theresa May and what a terrible candidate she is. It brings me back to Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump was down here pulling in 20,000 people at a rally, and Hillary Clinton was in my neighborhood at the Coral Springs Gymnasium with, you know, a couple of hundred people there. She had no message other than Trump is bad. She didn't have a reason that people should vote for her. And now she's going out and doing interviews and giving speeches and blaming everybody but herself. I do see
she was a terrible candidate. And we have a history of that. And she really didn't give the voter an organic reason to support her. I mean, that was what Obama was good at, whether you supported him or not. It was John Kerry versus W. Bush all over again.
Yep.
You didn't you hated W, but you didn't like Kerry. Nice
right?
man, but you didn't feel as though you were going to go out and vote for him. Same with her.
Yeah, I had the, you know, this, I've always said it. My first presidential election was Reagan versus Carter in 1980.
Okay.
I just turned 21.
I voted for John Anderson in 76.
Did you?
That was my first.
So, it seems like every election, the first time I voted for Obama, I voted for Obama. Although in the primary, I was a John Edwards supporter. I voted for John Edwards in the primary. Yeah. He dropped out right after, Florida. And then, of course, you know, the National Enquirer story broke. And, you know, this is the thing here. In England, do they care if somebody is fucking around or what people do in their
Not
personal
really.
Lives?
What you do in your bedroom between two consenting adults is your business. And, you know, yes, it'll get a titillating headline. And I use that word deliberately mm-hmm. for, you know, about 3.5 seconds.
Right.
But if you're not harming anybody, you know, and this is, you know, between consulting adults, that's what you do is what you do.
I still think John Edwards, even though his, you know, I question his personal choices, I think he would have been a better president than Obama. Boy, I hear people yelling at the radio all over the place. I think, you know, Obama, his problem was he wanted everyone to like him. And you can't get everyone to like you. He should have stuck to his guns and you know, gotten a single-payer health care. Speaking of...
It's unfortunate. He was the Jackie Robinson of politics.
Yeah.
He could not put a foot in the wrong direction for fear of blowback for him being a black man. And it was sad. It was just sad to see that he had to live his life so cautiously.
Now, how is I hate to call it satire. You heard about Kathy Griffin holding the bloodied head of Donald Trump?
Yeah.
I thought it was distasteful. No, it was very stupid on her part. But then I think back on all the things that they did to Obama. They hung him in effigy everywhere. They put, you know, bones through his nose. They turned him into an ape. They did all kinds of horrific things to him in cartoons and in parody. And yet there was no outrage with those things. And with this, they got her fired from her CNN gig. They're canceling shows on her. Do people in Britain, I know you keep calm and carry on. And I know that you guys, there was a lot of uproar over there, or not, that the New York Times described, you know, London is reeling from the attacks. We got a lot of pushback.
Yeah,
that you don't reel.
Reeling is not a good word. I mean, it just most people here in the UK would look at the word reeling and say, look, it was tragic. Yes,
right.
It happened. We feel very upset about it. But reeling is not a word I would ever use to describe, you know, the citizens of London. Again, we keep calm, we carry on, we do
yes.
what we have to do.
So would they be that up in arms over, you know, something similar, some other distasteful, ill-advised, comedic, you know, try?
Well, you know how divided we are and how polarized we are. Sure, someone will make a big deal out of it, and if they can make a lot of noise, they will. But there's not as many outlets here with which to make a lot of noise. I mean, BBC, ITV... are the main on, and Sky are the three main. And Sky would be the closest to Fox, but they're a sane version of Fox. I have to say, they've done a pretty good job. We have, you know, Channel 4 and Channel 5, which do some news, but it's not 24/7 like you
mm-hmm.
get with CNN and Fox
I'll
and
tell
MSNBC.
You, it's
and
too much. It's too much. It is fatigue. It's Trump fatigue. And it's every day at about 4:30, 5 o'clock, there's another breaking news story. I used to joke that CNN, they'd come on the air, every new show comes on with a breaking news banner, but it's never breaking news. Or it didn't used to be. Now it's always breaking news, and it's impossible to keep up with it. And it makes people like me nuts because I can't stay on top of it all.
You can't. And I get up every morning, and the first thing I do is I listen to the Maddow podcast, which is a broadcast of the audio portion
sure.
of what happened, so that if I need to make any changes to the rundown, it's based on the news that came out overnight. But that's about the only thing I have that I can work from.
Yeah, the only good news is, and I had my issues with Rachel during the election because she was virulently anti-Bernie, which pissed me off because she's smarter than that. She was very much towing the Democratic Party line. But now that we're sort of on the same side again, it gives me pleasure to see that, you know, her ratings are going up. People are paying attention, and she does a very smart show. She does, even though I think she repeats herself too much. I got to realize she has to dumb it down for the masses, so she does repeat
herself.
She's done
a super job of really, you know, connecting the dots,
yeah.
and you know, I take my hat off to her.
Is there somebody over there who does it there for politics?
Not really. I mean, that's part of our problem is that, again, it's what I talked about a while back with, you know, we've got this need for fairness and equal time.
Right.
Yet there's not a really good, strong journalist. There's one or two. Paxman is pretty good and Jon Snow are pretty good. But for the most part, if the Tory gets 90 seconds, the conservatives need 90 mm-hmm. seconds, and that's all they base it on. And it doesn't matter if they're spewing outright rubbish. Nobody calls them to task
right.
on what they've just said as being false.
Boy, there's got to be some happy medium. Well, the Three Muckrakers podcast. There you go. You can find the Three Muckrakers on iTunes. How often? When do you publish?
Still weekly.
So once a week, find that. Go to
yeah.
or
although
you.
we also occasionally in an election cycle we'll have a midweek. We had one on Monday, you know, to wrap up the Manchester events as well as what had happened in London on Friday night after
gotcha.
We had put our podcast to bed.
All right. Well, Dennis Campbell, we can also find you at UK Progressive at ukprogressive.co.uk and find Dennis Campbell on Twitter at UK Progressive. Thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate you.
Always a pleasure, Nicole. Always a pleasure.
You sticking with us through the sore throat. Go drink some tea with lots of honey. And
I'm doing hot water and lemon and nonstop.
There you go.
So it's,
okay. All right. Thank you so much, Dennis. It's great to talk with
you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dennis Campbell, really good guy. One of these days I'm going to meet him in person. And that's it for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. Tomorrow, 10 Eastern, the big hearing begins. All right. I will leave you with today's What's News? And we'll see you back here tomorrow with Howie Klein and to talk about what goes on in the hearing. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
White House spokesman Sean Spicer on Tuesday confirmed that the president's tweets are official statements.
Are President Trump's tweets considered official White House statements?
Well, the president is the president of the United States, so they're considered official statements by the president of the United States.
So Trump used Twitter to announce his pick for FBI director to replace the ousted James Comey, tweeting Wednesday morning, "I will be nominating Christopher A. Wray, a man of impeccable credentials, to be the new director of the FBI. Details to follow." Wray was the assistant attorney general of the DOJ's criminal division, working under both Alberto Gonzalez and John Ashcroft, as well as former FBI director James Comey, who was then deputy attorney general. In private practice since leaving the Justice Department in 2005, Wray represented New Jersey Governor Chris Christie as his personal attorney during the Bridgegate scandal. Former FBI Director James Comey is set to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee Thursday, beginning at 10 Eastern. Robert Costa of the Washington Post tweeting, "I'm told by two White House sources that President Trump does not plan to put down Twitter on Thursday. May live tweet if he feels the need to respond." Though Sean Spicer asserted he'll have a, quote, very, very busy day.
Mr. President, what message do you have to Jim Comey ahead of his testimony?
I wish him luck.
The New York Times Tuesday evening broke yet another story about Comey and Trump. Reporter Michael Schmidt explaining.
The day after Donald Trump asked Jim Comey to end the FBI's investigation into Mr. Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, Mr. Comey went directly to the attorney general and said, "Look, you can never leave me alone in the room with the president. I'm very concerned about that." Comey says, "I answer to you, the Attorney General, and you're supposed to be a buffer between the politics of the White House and the independent investigative nature of the FBI." Sessions never provided Comey with the assurances that he wanted, but this certainly showed how Trump's unusual governing style was pushing the Justice Department in ways that no recent administration had.
According to the New York Times, Attorney General Jeff Sessions offered to resign, telling the president he needed the freedom to do his job. The offer was turned down, but when asked if the president still had faith in Sessions, Sean Spicer meekly responded, quote, "I have not had that discussion with him." As the current director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, testifies Wednesday before the Senate Intelligence Committee, former DNI James Clapper spoke at Australia's National Press Club, comparing the current scandal of Trump's ties to Russia to Watergate.
I lived through Watergate. I was on active duty then in the Air Force as a young officer, and it was a scary time. I have to say, though, that I think, you know, compare the two, that Watergate pales. In my view, compared to what we're confronting now.
In the same speech, he said, quote, "I am very concerned about the assault on our institutions coming from both an external source, read Russia, and an internal source, the president himself." And, quote, "Then President-elect Trump disparaged the intelligence community's high confidence assessment of the magnitude and diversity of this Russian interference that I just described by characterizing us as Nazis. This was prompted, I realized later, by his and his team's extreme paranoia about and resentment of any doubt cast on the legitimacy of his election, which, of course, our assessment did." Wednesday's testimony by Director of National Intelligence Coates, Acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe, National Security Advisor Admiral Mike Rogers, and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is regarding the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. But Coates is likely to be asked about the reports that Trump asked him to intervene with Comey regarding the Michael Flynn investigation, too. Trump also tweeted his support for the condemnation of Qatar by other Middle Eastern nations. Qatar is a longtime U.S. ally and is home to a major U.S. military base. And now CNN is reporting that the rift was caused by Russian-planted fake news.
U.S. investigators believe that Russian hackers were behind a cyber breach against Qatar's state news agency. The hackers planted a false news report friendly to Iran and critical of President Donald Trump that is now being used by Saudi Arabia and other U.S. allies as a reason to carry out an economic and political blockade of Qatar. Now, U.S. and Qatari officials tell us that the FBI sent a team of investigators to Doha to help the Qatari government investigate the alleged hacking incident reported back in late May. Now, intelligence gathered by the U.S. security agencies indicates that Russian hackers were behind the intrusion. The alleged involvement of Russian hackers would add to concerns by U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies that Russia continues to try to use some of the same cyber hacking measures on U.S. allies that it used to meddle in the U.S. 2016 elections. Qatar hosts one of the largest U.S. military bases in the region, and U.S. officials say that the Russian goal here appears to be to cause rifts between the U.S. and its regional ally.
In a debate Tuesday night between the candidates in the special election for the congressional seat in Georgia's 6th District, Democrat John Ossoff reiterated his support for a living minimum wage, his opponent, Republican Karen Handel, defiantly stating,
"This is an example of the fundamental difference between a liberal and a conservative. I do not support a livable wage."
Election day in Georgia's 6th is June 20th. I got the news. And that's a bit of What's News for today. What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener supported, and we need your help to continue our work. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.